Just quickly, Hubert Humphrey, how would you describe him?
A small businessman, a very energetic guy, a delightful human being, but not very strong. He loved to be loved. He didn't like to stand out and take the slings and arrows of fate.
Edmund Muskie.
He was probably my favorite Senate, one of my favorites anyway. He was a powerful orator and a strong-willed man, yet a totally fair man. I was a Republican ranking member on the committee he chaired, and we had an agreement that we'd fight our battles in committee, but we'd stand together when the issues came to the floor, and we did. He never balked. The committee was stacked in such a way that it was against him, but he'd still fight his position in the committee meetings, and if he lost, he'd switch his position and be for the committee position on the floor. He was a good friend, really kind of a great, great man.
The Panama Canal, when the subject first came for the canal to be turned over to Panama, treaty to be ratified,
yeah.
Were you interested in that at all?
Not at all. Didn't seem to me like an issue worthy of our time. We build it, we own it, let's keep it.
So it wasn't an issue for you, but it did become an issue for you.
Yes, I'm not sure this is the whole reason it happened, but one of the reasons that changed my mind was a book that David Bartlett gave me. It's called Path Between the Seas. It's written by David McCullough. It's the story of the canal from its inception, the formation of Panama, until the conclusion of the canal in 1914. It doesn't deal with the treaties at all. It makes you realize that it was not Americans alone that sacrificed to build it, but the local people who caught malaria and yellow fever and paid a high price to have it built. And also it made you realize what an important revenue source this was for Panama, for the Panamanian government. I had a chance to talk to General Parfitt, who is the head of the Corps of Engineers, which maintains and operates the canals. And I asked Parfitt if he thought General Torrijos would start a civil war if we didn't approve the treaties. And he said there was no doubt he would. He said he'd run his campaign on that issue and dedicated his government to the approval of the treaties. And he said Torrijos won't have any choice but to resist our presence down there. And I said, well, and the next question is, if he starts civil unrest, can you handle it? And he said, well, that's not a military question. He said, if you'll give me the men I need and the equipment I need, certainly I can handle it. But he said, the question is a political question. He said, will you tie up my hands and cut off military support or financial support, as he did in Vietnam? If you do that, then certainly I can't handle it. I decided that there was only a commercial interest down there in trying to keep the canal fees down, and that it didn't have the military significance that it once had because we couldn't get our carriers through there and you couldn't get the super tankers through there. And I decided that rather than get a bunch of young people killed in defense of a shipping lane, that we better recognize it wasn't worth it and ratify the treaties.
But you felt tremendous pressure on both sides of that question.
Not pressure to confirm the treaties. There's very little local support for that. Again, there's a kind of a class, I'll call them, the opportunists who hang around Washington, who try to identify these emotional issues and use them to build their organization or to fatten their treasuries by making claims and raising people's fears. And they hit on the Panama Canal as one of those issues. John Birch societies, for instance, used the canal argument to fatten their treasury for years. A lot of people don't recognize what's going on. Even their good, level-headed people fall for some of those games that the parasites play.
How soon before the vote did you actually make up your mind?
No, I missed the day of the week, a day or two. But Shirley and I had a kind of a pattern. We'd go to the grocery store on Wednesday night and buy groceries for the week. We went this night to the grocery store, and we were walking down the aisle, and Shirley asked me if I was going to vote on the treaties. I told her truthfully I didn't know. So I had to come back to the state for something, and then I had to go back to Washington on Sunday night. I think it was Sunday night. And I took a tablet with me into the cabin, and I told myself I was going to write down all the pros and cons that I knew about the treaties. I first wrote down the pros, and when I got through with them, I realized there was not even an argument. So then I made some notes for my statement. The next day, which would have been a Monday, if I'm right about it, I dictated my statement to my secretary. On the next day, I read it on the floor. Jimmy Carter had a guy named Herky Harris, who was a White House lobbyist, who was assigned to me to try to persuade me to vote for the treaties. And I called Herky and told him I was going to do that.
Did President Carter encourage you to vote for it?
President Carter and Herky Harris invited me down to talk to Carter many times. And I told him I thought it was such an emotional issue that I better make the decision on my own, not appear to have been influenced by the president. There was a kind of a curious, I guess I'd call it codicil to this whole thing. When I told Herky I was going to vote for it, I said, now you guys got to realize it's going to cost me dearly with my local supporters because this is not a popular position in the state. I said, I'm not asking you for any commitment, but if you can approve some of our water projects, it sure would help me. And they did. I didn't ask them to do anything specific, except I tried to get them to support or authorize the diversion of the Salt Fork River around the Great Salt Plains. There's a Corps of Engineer program already on the books to build a new river around the Salt Plains and leave the salt there and flood into the Keystone Reservoir. If you get that done, the Keystone could become usable for industrial or municipal purposes. As it is now, it's flood control and power generation is all you get out of it. Anyway, the Corps of Engineers couldn't justify the economics of the Salt Fork diversion. But Herky Harris and a guy named Jim McIntyre, who was the U.S. budget officer, put in the money to the appropriation bill to build Arcadia Reservoir, and I think it was Atoka. And Jimmy Carter, in his book, I hadn't read it, I've heard about it, more or less accused me of trading my vote for those two water projects, and that's not true. That didn't happen.
You had already made up your mind.
Oh, yeah.
And then said, oh, by the way, that's if you exactly. can do that.
Yeah. I was more specific about the Arkansas diversion. They have what they call a cost-benefit ratio. It didn't meet the standards. It still ought to be done. That's another long story, but I won't go into it.